This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 293 for Wednesday, October 31st, 2018. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this afternoon, the afternoon of Halloween, is Megan Townsend. Hello!
Hello, how's it going?
It's going well. Listeners may be able to tell that I sound a little under the weather. I think it's a typical side effect of spending a weekend at a giant sci-fi fantasy convention.
Yep. I don't con crud.
Well, I don't think it's con crud. Here's the thing. I think it's from 12-hour days. I'm not 20 anymore. And also talking for all of that.
And
podcasting on Monday. So
yeah. So
I think it's just that my voice is shot because I don't have a lot of other cold or flu symptoms. I'm not tired. You know, I don't have any, like, a sore throat or anything like that. It's just, I really think it's a combination of just overexertion and being in a dry environment. The air in the building for HalCon was unique.
It was dry.
It was really dry. Like, you know, your lips were chapped. It was your nose. You felt it in your head. That it was sucking the moisture out of your nose, right? Like that's what I felt.
I did notice that I was sniffing. Like it's almost like my nose is trying to lubricate itself a lot more. So I didn't. Again, I don't have a cold. I don't feel like I have like the slight sniffles. I think now that are developing or have been developing over the last little bit. But when I was in the building, I kept trying to like sniff, and I think I don't know if it was a combination of the makeup I had on my face. I had like some fake stuff coming out of my nose.
Right.
And I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But also like, I don't know, I just felt dry. I felt like my nose was trying to like keep itself lubricated. That sounds really disgusting. I'm sorry.
Well, you know what, there are some, I've got some fun anecdotes from HalCon, and I mean, there are some things about cons that are disgusting. There's not really much that you can do about that. Before we get into that though, I do want to mention something quickly. We're going through some updates here at the Citadel Cafe. You can expect to be able to find the show currently on Spotify. The link for that will be in the show notes, and it should appear with every episode. There should be like a subscribe on iTunes, Android, Google Podcasts, Spotify right next to every episode that we post from here on out. You can also expect to see some changes and hopefully see it available on Stitcher as well. That's not available at the moment at the time of this recording, but by the time this recording is published, it should be. I have a little bit of admin work to do after the show today. Last but not least, it is the 31st of the month, and there are going to be some changes happening to Patreon. However, I believe I'm going to wait for those changes to happen until Patreon charges people for November. So all of the stuff that's happened in October, including this show, I'm going to be posting this show today. Patreon's going to go ahead and make the charges for those. I'm going to add the tiers, but it'll be after that I will be sending out a message to let people know, hey, if you want to adjust your pledge level to get a new reward level, etc., then we can do that. Most of it's really going to be goal related, so it's not going to necessarily affect patrons. It's just going to affect, you know, where the show is going and what possibility we have in the future for certain things. But you can expect to see those changes happening in the next couple days on Patreon. I will apologize now if Patreon spams your inbox. I mean, it's a good thing that it's notifying you of changes. It's just that there might be three or four changes that happen kind of close together. If not, then I will at least send out one message and make a post on Patreon letting people know what's going on with the show. It's basically, I'm just adding some tiers and just kind of, there are people that are supporting the show above and beyond just like the entry level patronage. And I want to do some cool things to reward people that are being super kind with their support. Cause it really helps. This time of year, we have the domain registration as well as the hosting, for the show, which is an annual fee, but I mean, it's in the, you know, it gets into the hundreds of dollars depending on which show we're talking about, etc. And so having Patreon run all year round basically allows the Citadel Cafe to kind of break even or even have a little bit of scratch to do extra stuff. So I appreciate that. And I want to make sure that I can do some extra stuff leading into the end of 2018 and early 2019 that we can reward the people that are supporting the show. And I really appreciate it. It's fantastic. I'll talk a little bit more about Patreon at the end. But yeah, it's been a good run, and I'm looking forward to doing a little bit more with the Citadel Cafe, because we're coming up on 300 episodes, 293. We're going to hit 300 before the end of the year.
Ooh, that's exciting. Wow.
That's a lot. That's a lot of shows.
That just occurred to me, and I was like, oh, wow, that's a lot. That's crazy.
So I need to email, obviously yourself, but a few other folks that are regulars on the show and see what I can't put together for like a special 300 episode, maybe do something unique for that rather than just having it be the average, you know, weekly something or other. But speaking of shared experiences, you and I both spent the weekend at HalCon for 2018 this year. I was behind a table, as I mentioned last week. You were attending, so you were walking around and enjoying the convention. I spoke a little bit about this on the Spawn Chunks extended podcast, the one that we do for patrons. So if you are a patron of both, I apologize if this is a little bit of a repetition, but I had a great time. I really enjoyed the people that I got to talk to. I really enjoyed the booth experience. There are some growing pains, but not nearly as much as I expected. It is a brand new space. So the Halifax Convention Center, which is not yet finished, I didn't realize.
I guess there's a whole other side that's not done.
So there was, I was talking with one of the, I won't mention who, but like one of the volunteers, and they had said that there was a problem with registration last year where the convention center hadn't let HalCon know yet how much space they had. So they were trying to juggle registering vendors and bringing people in without knowing how much room they had, which that's a terrible problem to have, you know?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that I'm very careful, because there's been a lot of feedback online where people are saying it wasn't a very good year financially for them. And I want to put it out there and nip it in the bud that I think some people are very quick to blame the con. I don't necessarily think that that's a good way to go. I walked around. I took a break on Sunday, and I was able to walk around the con. And
oh, good. I was going to ask if you got a chance to look at anything.
I didn't go downstairs just because, well, two reasons. One, which was a real problem, but the other one was I heard it wasn't as good. I heard most of the artists were upstairs.
Yes.
And that's what I wanted to see, was other people kind of in my realm that were doing stuff. Mm. I knew I wasn't going to have time to see the costume contest or go to see a Q&A, etc. Although next year I might do that. I might see if I can find someone that's willing to sit at the table while I go and check out something I really want to check out, and just have them sit there and sell stuff, like sell prints, and just be like, yeah, he'll be back in an hour. You know, and just because I miss out on a lot when I have to work the entire weekend. You've met Mike. He's been on the show actually a couple times. But Mike helps me out at the table. It's great for him because he gets a vendor pass, because every vendor gets two passes. So you get a helper. It makes when you have to leave, I don't leave, but he goes and grabs lunch. You know, for us, he'll be able to sit at the table for 10 minutes while I go to the bathroom. Even if someone wants a book signed or something, he can say like, look, he's just on a bathroom break. He'll be back in 10, like do a lap and come back and he'll be back in the chair. So it just allows you to not miss sales. It just kind of defers stuff. It's also a huge help when I'm doing things like signing books and drawing and sketching in them for people, because he can take care of the money exchange, doing the checkout on the iPad, and he can just hand me stuff. Like he can just like, here, sign this for this person, and here, sign this for this person. And so I can continue to work on a book, sign a print, and it's all taken care of. Whereas if I have to stop drawing in the book, get the change, you know, punch it into the iPad, like do all that kind of stuff, it just takes that much longer for everything. So having that help at the table is phenomenal. I really appreciate, you know, he volunteers. I mean, like he gets the vendor pass, which means he can walk around and enjoy the con and he doesn't have to pay for a weekend pass, et cetera. And plus we're friends. We get to hang out at the table and chat all weekend, yeah. Which is nice too. So, but I really appreciate it because it really, now that I'm at, you know, 5-6 years tabling at different conventions around the city, I do end up being busy enough where having someone helping is, I would say, essential. Unless it's an afternoon, like just like decaf is a 5 hour, you know, one afternoon go. But I'm off my rocker. Like I'm flat out for those 5 hours. And I, you know, there's not necessarily even enough room at decaf to have someone help me out. But at HalCon there, it makes a big difference with the foot traffic because there's also a lot more engagement. There's a lot more talking with people. You get into conversations about things like Daredevil or, you know, you talk about art or you talk about their kids being into Spider-Man or something. So it's nice to be able to have that conversation going while Mike is, you know, making change and doing all the kind of the technical stuff. And plus Mike can also jump in and you know, be part of the conversation as well.
Yeah.
It's like we can both do two things at once, but none of us can do three things at once. You know, mm-hmm. It's one of those situations.
Yeah.
But to give it back to my point and get this out of the way, there are some growing pains in being in the new space, but I don't lay that at the feet of bad planning necessarily, you know, on HalCon's part. HalCon is a big convention now. It's not a little mom and pop job. There are artists that I saw at HalCon that I've never seen at any other convention locally, or event locally. And these events locally, their tables are half the price of HalCon. Because the events are 1 or 2 days, even a half day, there are opportunities at those conventions to then split a table with a friend and see how you do. And I've heard this mentioned on other comics shows, and it's actually something I've kind of put a feather in my cap to talk about on as a reminder on other podcasts that I'm on. But that is that just because you feel like you want to table at HalCon doesn't necessarily mean that you should table at HalCon. And I want to be careful. I don't want to sound like I'm being negative or I'm coming down or I'm sounding, you know, cocky or snobby about stuff. But HalCon is a big investment. It's a huge time investment. It's an expensive con for con goers. It's an expensive con for people that buy tables. So if you don't make your table back, especially if it's your first year at HalCon, that's not the end of the I don't want to say it's not the end of the world, that sucks, but if it's your first convention, I feel like there should have been more research. Like you can spend, you know, a third of the money on a table at a smaller convention locally here in Halifax and you're essentially going to get the same people. Like the hardcore fans that are going to want to go out there and buy art and support local artists are going to hit all of these things. They always do. Because I see the same fans and friends at Geekquinox that I see at Decaf, that I see at HalCon. Yeah. You know.
I was going to say that maybe like Geekquinox would be a good starting point before you decide to jump into the HalCon circuit. Because HalCon is really big. I mean, it's really nice how many local people are able to come together because a lot of us are local. Like a lot of the people who do come to HalCon are local. We do have a very, very local community and a lot of local heroes that come in and out all the time. But it is like, this is the, and I walked into the convention center this year. I was like, ooh, okay. Now this feels like, and I don't mean that it's never been a real convention, but I was like, this is now a real convention. It's big. It's in a huge space.
Yep.
There are multiple floors. It's big, like it's gotten huge. And like part of me is really proud at how big it's come from like the first year at the Lord Nelson to like having 150 people show up to have, you know, a crazy huge, you know, space now. Like to see the way that it's grown in like 9 years is amazing.
I agree. I think that you really have to give a nod to all the people that bring HalCon together because it's a volunteer con. I mean, there are one or two people I think maybe that get paid, but like most of them are just purely volunteering their time because they're passionate about this kind of event. They're passionate about the kind of content and the people that they can bring in. Like, I don't want to focus on celebrities, but like when you've got someone like LeVar Burton and Billy Boyd and Laura Vandervoort, like all showing up in Halifax, like that's a big deal, you know, because it matters and because it's going to bring in the numbers that you need to make this a successful business venture.
That
and that is where I need to kind of point out people, you know, It's a lot of fun to do a con, but there's been a lot of, specifically, I'm going to give a nod to Brad Geiger and Dave Kellett, both of whom I've interviewed on Comics Coast to Coast, but they have a show called Comic Lab. So if you're listening to this podcast and you are an artist, whether or not you're doing comics or whether you're just doing illustration and pinup fan art, whatever, but if you're tabling at a convention, go and listen to some of the convention related talks that they do on Comic Lab, because these are guys that have 10 to 15 years experience ahead of me and really have got no scruples about just giving you the brass tacks. Like, if you do not make your money back and then some at a convention, it's not worth going. That's their line. That's their line in the sand. Now, they have different priorities. They have families they have to worry about, that, you know, traveling, they have to airfare. There's a lot of different things. They're talking mostly about really large conventions in the US, like Emerald City, you know, San Diego, big, New York, yeah, that sort of stuff. So there's more investment involved too, in terms of money and time, but it's, the mentality should be the same. Like, if you're doing this kind of stuff, if you're just doing it for fun, great. Then you really shouldn't be moaning and groaning about not making a lot of money. But if you're going into it as a business, like I am, then I have certain expectations, and, I think I did better than some years this weekend. Just, I, you know, really? to be a little bit more transparent about it. Yeah. Like I think that's, I did good. Better. But I also feel that it was people buying more. I had more investment from, like, say, people doing commissions. So larger purchases rather than the number of people buying small things. So for me, yes, I felt like the foot traffic was lighter than it could have been. But I personally still did very well because I was able to, I mean, I've been doing this for 6 or 8 years. So, like, I can kind of gauge, like, oh, it's been slow. I'll put some stuff on sale on Sunday to see if I can't move some extra merch and stuff like that. But for people that were just there and not engaging, that's the other thing that I want to, you know, give some people some tips too, is because there's a lot of people out there that I would walk by their table and they had fantastic art, but they didn't look up from their cell phone. So yeah. It's like, you know, look, if you're going to be there, be there. You don't know who's in front of your table. I run a small publishing company. Like, if I'm at your table, I'm looking at it in terms of, like, is this someone that in a couple of years I might want to work with? Is this someone that I might want to have on Comics Coast to Coast in the next couple of weeks? And if I can't get you to even say hello to me, chances are that's not going to happen. And I saw a lot of that. There was a lot of, I don't want to say first time people, but there felt like there was a lot of new people tabling at the con. And I think that there could be a little bit more research done into what the expectations could be. And I'm just worried that because of the new space and because of, yes, there were some issues, you know, with load in and load out. And there were some issues with, not for me, but I heard stories. And there were some issues with the fifth floor ballroom where I was being closed for being at capacity.
Yeah, that only happened once.
That happened once, but there were vendors that were stuck away from their tables.
Oh, shit. Ooh.
That could not get back up. That. Like, there's like, look, you need to let me back up. I paid to be here this weekend. You need to, like, if that's the case, if capacity is something that can happen, then the fact that the vendors are there, they need to be included in the capacity, whether they're there or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if there's 50 vendors upstairs and your capacity is X, then that capacity has to be that plus, like, including the 50. Like, you have to drop your capacity down by 50 to assume that the vendors are just always there.
Because
for someone that is only making a little bit past their table fees or is having a slow con, that's stressful. Like, if you're stuck downstairs just before some big event, like, say, like the LeVar Burton Q&A gets out and you're not at your table, that's hundreds of people that are just going to walk by without you being there. I mean, that sucks. Yeah. Like, that's really frustrating. So there are some things like that happen, but I'm not necessarily, like, I don't want to say it's all at the feet of HalCon. Like, the convention center is new. It's never had, you know, an event like this before.
Yeah.
I think next year is going to be phenomenal.
I do too.
Yeah.
I'm excited for next year. I didn't stay for the closing ceremony, so I don't know if they announced anything special. One thing I wish they would do, though, and they've done this in past years, and it's always gotten me super jazzed for the next year, and other conventions do this, is they announce one big guest at the closing ceremonies. They'll announce somebody, and then it just gets everyone super hyped for next year. They haven't been doing that the last couple of years.
No.
Actually, I think they've done it like three or four times.
Yep.
They did it with Bradley D. Baker, guy, someone from Star Wars. Donald Glover's playing him in the new Solo movie.
Billy D. Williams.
I totally wrong. Sorry, fanboys out there. I was just names, just totally. I'm not a fake nerd girl, I promise. Yeah, they announced him. They announced a couple of anime voice actors at one point. They announced a bunch of people, and it just got people super stoked for next year, like uproarious applause. Everyone's like, man, I can't wait for next year. And they haven't done that last couple years. And I get that trying to nail down appearances and like scheduling and trying to like book that far in advance can be difficult, especially if an actor is still a heavily working actor, because like in the case with like Trisha Helfer, who was supposed to be at HellCon this year but had to cancel due to filming commitment, stuff can happen at any given time.
Yes.
Like you have like 24 hours notice to get, you know, any sort of filming notice at you know, really.
Yeah.
Like the film industry is not very good on planning in advance, which is my one beef with it. But so like I do get that nailing down a schedule is really difficult. But I wish they would do at least one guest announcement. That would be pretty exciting for the masses, for HellCon. That would get people really, really amped for next year. And then that would like also pave the way for, you know, what sort of theme are we going with this year? If they even have a theme this year. I feel like we have had themes in the past where we have like, you know, very, very specific kinds of guests from very specific kinds of things, so that it, you know, you'd see more of a particular style one year.
More fantasy or more sci-fi or more superheroes. Yeah.
This year was like a pretty even blend. It was even, LeVar is very, you know, well known for reading Rainbow and Star Trek.
And then
Billy Boyd is very well known for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Right. So, I do wish they would do that one guest announcement at the end of closing ceremonies, just to get people amped and excited for next year. And we do have like stuff coming up still throughout the year. Like we have, I know they do like the Yule Ball every year, which is like a big fancy dance. And then they do the Parade of Lights, which I got to figure out the dates of, cause I want to do that this year. There's a bunch of things that,
I felt too, that the guest announcements were quite late in the year.
I agree. I was talking about that with Alistair too, because they hadn't really announced anyone by the time the tickets went on sale this year.
Yeah.
And again, I get that it's really hard to nail down actors, especially like big name, high profile, still working actors. It's really difficult to get their schedules.
You could be, you know, 3 or 4 months out from con time, ready to announce someone, and then they cancel. Then you can't announce. And then it takes you another 6 weeks to find a replacement. Like, I understand that there's a lot of give and take, and there's a lot of behind the scenes that we don't know. But I agree that I think that they should. I would rather have them announce people earlier.
Yes.
Even if they end up having to dial it back and say, look, we were going to get person X and something came up and they canceled, but we're working to replace them with a different guest. I would rather at least know ahead of time who they had, who had said yes. Because for me, you know, growing up in Halifax, Dartmouth, and having these celebrities come around and being able to have a possibility of meeting them or even just see them walk by my table, like that to me is just a cool idea. Even if they have to backtrack and it doesn't happen, the fact that this person says, yes, I'd like to come to Halifax.
Yeah, that's
is really
cool.
Like I remember, and like I was talking with Mike, and we couldn't really figure out who we would kind of wait in line for. Like, what celebrity would you wait in line to either meet or
have
your
one.
Picture taken? And I have one. Yeah. Who's your one?
Doug Jones.
Okay. Yeah.
Doug Jones he's in the new Star Trek Discovery as Saru right now.
Yeah. And he was also in Hellboy, I think. Didn't he do the...
Yeah. He was Abe Sapien in Hellboy. Yeah. He was the amphibian man in Shape of Water.
Yeah.
He's been a bunch of different characters in a bunch of Guillermo del Toro films.
Yeah.
he is so underrated in Hollywood. Like, I have a lot of beef with The Shape of Water because he was invited to everything as a plus one. He was the reason the movie was made. He is the main part of the movie. He's the main conflict of the movie.
Right.
As an actor, he was completely snubbed by everything in Hollywood. And I he deserves so much more respect and more love than I think he gets because he's so talented and so skilled. He does everything with a smile on his face and works under heavy prosthetics for like 17 hours a day. The guy is a machine. Mm-hmm. And I just want to give him a big ol' hug. And he's so nice. We used to chat on Twitter all the time before he got really busy. But I would love to just be able to hey, we used to talk a little bit on Twitter, like send messages back and forth. And he does acknowledge when people like, you know, reach out to him. Like I did tweet him, like, Doug Jones is so snubbed by Hollywood. He should be invited to all these things because he did so well in this movie. But he, like Guillermo del Toro, had to invite him to an award show as a plus one for his own movie that he was the star in. And I was like, that hurts my soul because he's so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's him. Doug Jones, hands down. If there's one guest who would come that they announced, I would probably cry.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, like, I don't get very starstruck very easily, but I would definitely cry over Doug Jones.
So I can't really think of anybody, especially in terms of like waiting in line for an hour, you know, paying $50 for a photo and getting them to sign it. Me and Mike couldn't really come up with anybody outside. I think Mike came up with Mark Hamill. Just because,
yes,
from what I know about Mark Hamill, on top of just being, you know, a Star Wars fan my entire life, something that shaped, you know, kind of like my view of sci-fi and entertainment. I've also seen him on various interview shows, like, you know, Conan or, you know, The Late Show or whatever. And he just seems like he would be a fun person to meet. Like, you would have no idea how that's going to go. You know it's going to be pleasant, but you just don't know how goofy or fun or whatever. He seems to really enjoy and encapsulate the fact that he's famous for being Luke Skywalker and the Joker voice on Batman the Animated Series and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, I also really, really respect Harrison Ford and his work in all of the films that I like, Indiana Jones and stuff like that. I have really no qualms about meeting him in person. He doesn't seem like a very open and charismatic guy in person. That's fine.
Apparently he's very shy.
Exactly. So, and that's fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it just doesn't seem like that to me doesn't strike me as someone that I would put on that list. On the flip, I could see myself being quite excited to have an opportunity to meet someone like Dwayne Johnson. I don't even really watch his films. I just find his personality and the good that he does in the world and what he's doing with his fame, I find really interesting and really cool. And I have a lot of respect for the work that he puts in terms of just his physicality and stuff like that. So that I think would be a treat to meet him. But none of it is something that I really kind of put up there as someone that I would wait in line and pay money to go see. And I think that that probably comes from having such good experiences in the past, being lucky enough to be a guest at HalCon the year that I released my Starcrossed book, and having the opportunity to meet John Rhys-Davies and not just meet him and get something signed, but I had a glass of wine with him and he talked with six of us in a group and he was engaging with each and every one of us. He wanted to know what I did for a living. He talked to me about art and then he talked to my girlfriend at the time and then he talked to the musicians that were at the table with us. And like, he was just really genuine. It wasn't like you don't get 3 minutes or 90 seconds with him while he signs the photograph. He was genuinely interested in getting to know people in the room. And I really, really enjoy those kind of encounters.
I remember him being really interesting at HalCon because he wanted to walk around the convention. Mm-hmm. So there were times he came up, we couldn't get a photo with him, but we were always like posing for photos. And he came up to a group of us. He's like, I love your costumes. You're excellent. What are they? Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to move on. Nice to chat with you. And then he just went on his way. But he just wanted to, like, you know, explore the convention and be with the people. And I was like, that is very, very down to earth and very nice. Garrett Wang was also one of them. He's in Star Trek.
Yep.
He was another one. He was like super jazzed to be here. He's like, oh, can I come back every year? Can this be a thing?
Yeah, he's been back a number
of
times.
Excited.
Yeah. And I get the feeling, and this is just anecdotal. I have no idea if this is true, but I feel like after Garrett Wang was here, a number of other Star Trek people started to come. And I kind of feel like, I mean, assuming that they've been at conventions together before, they sometimes even in the same television series, so that, you know, he'd have friends that he's worked with for years. But I feel like in that case, it almost felt like he was probably championing HalCon and saying like, look, I had a lot of fun. It's for the grand scheme of North America, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere, it's really far east, but you should go check this out. And I feel like for people like, what is this HalCon thing? He might've been like, oh no, you really have to go. Cause I think that's something that I really enjoy about HalCon. And again, a tip of the hat to all the people that put it on, that
all volunteers, like, you guys do an amazing job.
It has that small town charm.
It does,
even though it's
yeah.
a big convention now, it's the biggest in Atlantic Canada, it still has that small town feeling. So I get the I feel like the guests may have the opportunities that they want to walk around and or yeah. even when the con is over, it's a small city. They can go and have a meal somewhere and not be swamped by paparazzi and
yeah.
you know, that kind of thing.
I feel like Canada, and also I think Halifax in general, I've heard that Canada is more respectful about celebrities than I think other parts of the world or the states are.
Yep.
Because celebrity culture in the states, I mean, I guess in North America in general, but celebrity yeah. culture is like you put someone up on a pedestal when really like they put their pant leg on one leg at a time, just like you do.
yeah.
Right. Like they're normal people. They eat, they sleep, they breathe, whatever. Like they bleed just like the rest of us. And they're humans. And I think that despite having someone be a very, very high profile, very respected individual, I think, you know, even though it's still like, oh, there they are, it's really exciting to see them, I think we still are able to speak to them like people. I've heard that before, someone has said, oh, I liked being in this part of Canada because no one lost their mind, right? Yeah. Or like no one went absolute batshit crazy over meeting me. It was just like, hello, nice to meet you. I've met Billy Boy before in
oh, really?
Halifax.
I didn't
yeah.
know that.
Yeah, it was at years ago when I was in film school, I had to go, I was at an event with my classmates and it was called a 5x5 thing. And it was showcasing 5 music videos from 5 different musicians with 5 different directors and filmmakers. And it was like a competition. So they just played, 5 music videos back to back to back. And I was sitting, it was at the studio theater in Neptune on Argyle Street. So it was just like a small little screening, small room, small area.
Nice.
And I sat down and I was turned around in my seat talking to a couple friends and a bunch of people kind of dressed nicely. They had, beer with them and everything. They all kind of sat down next to me and someone left like a chair between us, but I turned around and he bumped my bag and I'm like, oh, sorry, I'll move that. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. Don't even, don't even stress it. And then I turned around to talk back to my friends and they all had this look of like, oh my God. And I was like, what? They're like, you're sitting next to Billy Boyd. And I was like, what? It wasn't registering. They're like, you're sitting next to Pippin from Lord of the Rings right now. And then I turned around and looked and I was like, oh shit, I am. Oh God. Okay. And I was very aware of it the whole time that I was there.
Yeah.
But he was very nice. Like he asked me a question. He was like, oh, like, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm a film student. He's like, oh, excellent. That's great. Great to see that you're doing that. And then afterwards, after everything was done, we were outside. He was just kind of hanging around by himself. I think he was waiting for some other people to finish chatting. He seemed very out of place. But my friend went up and she was like, hello, Mr. Boyd. And he turned to her and she's like, I'm a huge fan. I'd like to meet you. He's like, oh, hi, I'm Billy. Nice to meet you. She just addressed him as Mr. Boyd. So obviously she knew who he was. But he's like, oh, my name's Billy. Pleasure to meet you. Like he introduced himself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he was very nice. He was a very nice and very like quiet, friendly man. So I didn't really feel the need to meet him again at this particular thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really cool when you can have the more casual kind of
yes.
run-ins.
Yeah.
I know a couple of people that work behind the scenes at HalCon and they've been sharing some stories of like, being in the green room or, walking with different guests to different venues, having an opportunity to chat with them as they're preparing them to either go on stage or whatever. And it's because those are real earnest conversations that the celebrity is not yet in front of 300 people. They're just backstage talking with, people that they've been probably talking with all weekend, even from a distance. I wasn't able to hear what's said, but where my table was situated, I could see the autograph lines for folks. And Laura Vandervoort, I think I'm pronouncing her last name right. She was there with, I'm assuming what you would call like her HalCon handler, the person that would be moving her from, Q&A to signing to
guardian
whatever.
Handler.
Yeah, like the kind of a fun, just kind of like a someone to show you around the con so they don't have to kind of navigate by themselves. And also would probably be to help to kind of like, shoot people away that might be, causing a crowd, etc. But they were in between, like there was nobody in the line or there was a lull or something else was happening, so they had a couple of minutes to chat, and they were it was an engaged, animated chat with someone that this person that that Laura Vandervoort probably has not met for more than 15 or 20 minutes, like it's just they're just hanging out, but both of them seem to be very engaged, and so it's really cool when you can kind of see people just being people, you know, and not being, because you have this, sometimes you can have this negative connotation of celebrities and how they might be just like, oh, I have to do this other signing or whatever. But they all, these days, they all, a lot of what I see, they seem to really, really appreciate fans and just how, I don't want to say rabid, but just how enthusiastic they are.
Yeah.
About the properties and things, especially because, well, I think a lot of this stuff is being done so well. I mean, you take the Marvel movies, for example, and how big and how widespread the fandom is for people like, you know, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And but you see them in interviews and you get the idea that, like, no, these people really appreciate the fact that they're part of a huge, huge franchise and that it affects a lot of people.
Because, like, the franchise is not going to go anywhere if there's no fans to enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's, some people kind of shit on fandom culture a little bit. Now, do I think that some fans can go a little overboard?
Oh, sure. We're talking about the balance.
Yeah.
The balance in between, yeah.
But if you can, like, enjoy the property, really enjoy it, you know, put out art or fan fiction or whatever it is that you're interested in to kind of show how much you like this, want to meet these people at conventions and say thank you. Because some people, like, I mean, I wouldn't say that a performance has really touched my spirit in a way that's made me have a, you know, piece of enlightenment or anything. Like, I've never had that before. But I appreciated the work and the effort that someone has put into that thing? Absolutely, 100%. And that's been very inspiring. But there are some people who, you know, meet a celebrity and they're just like, you've changed my life in a way that I didn't realize could be changed. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it's you know, it's great. And I respect that a lot. And I think that, you know, some celebrities can get very like, oh, these fans are all just crazy. But, like, I think the people who come to HellCon, or at least the guests that we've had, we've been very fortunate, are just very genuinely appreciative of how grateful that fans are for their work.
And
because,
I think,
like, it's very thankless. It's very thankless in the moment.
Right.
And then to see the impact that it can have afterwards,
yeah,
can be very eye-opening.
Yeah. And I think, too, that there's a balance there of, because I would imagine from what I've seen, HellCon fans also approach with that level of respect and quiet, you know, they're not screaming and taking photos when they shouldn't be. And, like, it's just like, no, this is the opportunity I have to meet this person. I'm going to be, got to be cool. You know, like, there's a lot of that going on. Like, I was surprised even, like, some of the selfies and photos that I've seen with some of the celebrities where you would think, like, you'd get to stand next to them and have a photo taken and then they sign it after. But in some cases, like, celebrities are putting their arms around people, and it's like, you wouldn't necessarily think that that's something that they would be doing at a convention. They're like, you would think that there might be rules to that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm the type of person, I mean, probably the same as a lot of fans, like, if I was to get my photo taken with one of the actors or people that I really admire, they would have to make that move. I wouldn't expect them, but if they put their arm around me, they'd be like, hey, let's take a photo. I'd be like, oh, okay. Like, that sounds,
yeah,
you know, since it's your suggestion, sure. But I would go in there with zero expectation other than being, like, you know, next to them. You know,
see, well, I got my photo taken with Lights at an airport, who's my favorite. Anyone who knows me knows
yes.
that Lights is my jam. I love her and I think she's amazing. But I didn't realize until after I reviewed the photo, like, I took a selfie on a camera. She had her arm right around me, like, slung right around my shoulders. And I was like, oh, I didn't think that. I didn't expect that to be a thing. But a lot of them, I can think it makes for an easier photo, but also it's, you
yes.
know, especially for someone who's paying money to get a commemorative photo with someone. It's like, you want to make it good.
Well, yeah, that's
true. You
want to
make
too.
It a good picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
so,
I like the ones where they ham it up sometimes. Like, I've seen,
me too.
I've
me
seen
too.
When Gates McFadden was here. I think I might have been even Alistair. I can't remember exactly because I don't know if I've seen the photo, but I've seen situations where, like, they bring, like, a prop tricorder and they'll give it to her and be like, hey, can you pretend like there's something really wrong with me? And it's like, that's kind of fun, where she's scanning them and going like, oh dear, you know, like that.
Oh dear,
you're
yeah.
like that, 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 that's a fun opportunity. And so I know we got to move on because there's some people that are like, HellCon, what's this? Why are we still talking about HellCon?
So,
but I mean, if you're in the region, if you're in Eastern Canada at all, I think it's worth the trip. But I have a really, really fun story to share about Billy Boyd. And I had a couple of people this weekend commission me to do original artwork. And I can't thank them enough, because that kind of thing on a weekend like HellCon, where you may have some variation in foot traffic, means the world to me, because it's a really engaging way for me to work with patrons and people that want to support art and artists. And so I did two, one for a guy named Daniel, and he got me to do, Gwendolyn from Fire Emblem. There might be some nerds in the audience that know who I'm talking about. I didn't. I had to look it up. Mm-hmm. But it's a really fun RPG character, kind of anime-esque. So I did a fun chibi work on that on one of my colored pieces of paper, which people might see on Instagram. But Hannah was a girl that got me to draw Pippin from Lord of the Rings. And so all this talk about signing leads me right into the fact that instead of getting a photograph signed by Billy Boyd, she wanted me to draw a cartoon of Billy Boyd as Pippin that then she could take up and get signed.
Which is super cool, by the way. It's
a wonderful idea. It's so unique. And you like, because really, like, the commission was, I think it was around $75. Like, not to kind of peel back the curtain, because my prices vary depending on, you know, what people are asking, how many characters, black and white, color, blah, blah. There's a lot of different stuff. So it really depends on what's going on. But like right away, it's like, there's lots of pictures of Pippin online. Like it was hobbits are pretty cartoony anyway. So, mm-hmm. And it wasn't meant to be a caricature. Like, you know, I wasn't supposed to be making fun of Billy Boyd, similar to how like Bruce McKinnon makes fun of politicians in the political cartoons, but it was meant to be like a cartoonified, you know, version. She liked my art that I had on display, so she wanted me to do it. And we ended up, I penciled the whole thing on one day, and then I got in touch with her and said, look, rather than gambling and me finishing this tonight and you having one opportunity to go get it signed, why don't you take it as it's done now with the pencils to get signed? Then I can finish the inks later and you can pick it up later in the weekend. And so she thought that was a better idea, just because it allowed, you know, if she didn't get it signed Saturday, there would be a second attempt on Sunday.
Yes.
So I did that. Billy Boyd signed it. So a little bit of extra pressure on me, because Billy Boyd is actually going to see this cartoon of him as Pippin. So when Hannah came back to the table, she relayed the message that Billy Boyd absolutely loved it. He thought it was a really, really cool idea, and he thought the cartoon was lovely. And so that's just fun. I didn't get a chance to meet him. She said that he wanted to come over, and she pointed out the table, but I'm guessing he probably just didn't have time. He probably had a lot of different things he had to go to. Because on Saturday, you've got like the signing, and then there's the soiree, and then you have to go, there's another signing and a Q&A the next day. And I mean, the guy's got to eat and, you know, have a break and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So unfortunately I didn't see him. And I really didn't leave the table very much. So if he had been around, I more than likely would have seen him walk by. But that was the highlight of my weekend. And so I want to tip my hat to Hannah to say thanks very much. She was also really lovely to deal with. She was descriptive in what she wanted, but she was also just like, I like your work. Just kind of have some fun with it. So I'll eventually be able to share it. I haven't asked her yet. She shared some photos online, but I want to make sure that I've got her permission before I post it on my website and stuff. But, so I picked the scene, to kind of spoof on, where Merry and Pippin find the pantry stores at Orthanc after they defeat Saruman with the Ents, and they find a bunch of food and, pipeweed. And so I've got Pippin sitting on a couple of floating boxes, leaning up against a big barrel of pipeweed from the South Farling, and he's smoking, and he's got his foot kind of resting on a floating roast chicken, you know, that's kind of drifting by.
I love it.
It was a lot of fun to do.
I saw it, and it looked amazing. It looked super.
Thank
super
you.
Great.
Yeah, it was really good. But that was kind of like the highlight of my weekend, and I really appreciated it. It was a lot of fun to do, and it just provides this really great story of like, I didn't get to meet Billy Boyd, but he got to see my artwork, which is almost better. It's just mm-hmm. It's one of those things, right, that you just have to. You know, as an artist, it's weird. You never think about where your art is going to land and who's going to see it in what capacity. And for that kind of stuff to happen, it was really kind of a treat. The other thing that I normally get out of HalCon, which I wanted to ask you about, is the costumes. And I did not feel like there was as many costumes this year. Those that I saw looked like they were perhaps purchased, whereas a lot of the times you get stuff where it's more handcrafted and handmade. I think, though, it's more likely, given from what I've heard, that a lot of the costume folks didn't make it up off the first couple floors of HalCon. I feel, or if they did, they made it to the main ballroom and they didn't walk around in the fifth floor ballroom to see the vendors. Because normally it's this crazy parade constantly of these amazing costumes. And I saw some good ones, but not nearly the same amount. So I'm guessing it's just that the traffic didn't go upstairs. Did you see like a lot of costumes compared to the last years?
I saw a lot of very simple costumes, and I'm wondering if this year was kind of like a test for a lot of things, to see how big people could get away with things.
Man, yeah.
Because we're so used to, and I saw some, like, there was a huge Thanos.
Yes.
Did you see that one? Yeah,
yeah,
that one was huge and
like,
crazy.
They were
amazing.
Probably looking, the eye holes in the costume were probably around neck level.
Yeah. No, like there is, I did notice a lighter caliber of costumes this year, or much simpler things. And I think part of that was a combination of people trying to kind of feel out the convention center, how it was going to be, how big it was, so how big they could get away with costumes. Mm-hmm. I noticed that, like, there's a costume that I definitely want to do at some point down the line that's going to be giant. And I don't know how I'm going to navigate in the center at all with that thing on. We'll have to see. I think it's a combination of new space. How is this going to look? How big can I go? I think a lot of people reserved their big costumes for the costume contest, which happens often. I feel like a lot of people will reserve their big one for the costume contest, and they don't stray very far from kind of the main con floor. And usually that's in the dealer's hall downstairs, or they don't manage to get any further than the main ballroom, which I think is what happened. But I did notice like a kind of lighter, you know, quantity of costume. There's always like, you know, you have all the main cosplayers, like you have Cassie Seward, who's, you know, she did the Trico puppet. She was a guest this year, one of the cosplay guests. She was a puppeteer last year. You have Luca Wakajuice.
Yep.
Who's there every year? Nathan DeLuca. I actually didn't see Nathan DeLuca the whole time I was there. He was around, but I didn't see him.
I remember the Wakajuice transformation video that she posted on Instagram. I'll post these people's profiles.
Yeah.
I follow them both
and
in the show notes.
They're all amazing.
It is insane.
Crazy.
Unbelievable costumes. Cassie's, I believe it's Horizon Zero Dawn. I don't remember the name of the main character, but she
plays. Aloy.
Okay. I've been watching her build that over the last like 6 or 8 months on Instagram.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating to see the process behind it all, mm-hmm. and how many different parts the bow comes in. And like, it's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. She put a lot of time and effort. I like seeing the process of how people mm-hmm. build their costumes. I think it's very helpful as someone who likes to make costumes. I think it's very helpful to share that information mm-hmm. because there may be a fledgling cosplayer who wants to do that, doesn't know how. And then having someone go through the process of how the mechanics actually work is very helpful.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's,
it's
super helpful. I've certainly dropped his name before on the show, but Bill Duran from Punish Props.
Yeah.
That's how he makes his living. Yeah. Like that's how he does it. He makes educational videos and books and to how to make foam armor, how to make, you know, he was one of the first guys out there that had some really good N17, is it N17 from Mass Effect? Is that the...
N7.
N7,
yeah.
So, NC17 is a rating. N7, but the N7 armor for Mass Effect. The first that I saw really widespread on the internet, it was his design that mm-hmm. he made, and it looks so good. And it's foam floor mats. Like, it's just the level of ingenuity that goes into this kind of stuff is really, really cool.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Just like to help what people have found to make their costumes, because like I remember Warbler being a huge thing in the past, and it still is, like it's still a fairly huge cosplay material component, but it is very expensive. It makes your costumes very, very durable, but it doesn't make them very comfortable to wear. So a lot of foam armor is kind of coming back, like with the thick floor mats and different levels of mm-hmm. of thickness for things, and using Dremels and everything to kind of get the shapes that you want. But yeah, no, I definitely did notice a bit of a lightening up of the cosplay this year, or you know, where people would wear different costumes every day, and sometimes, you know, people want to wear a comfortable costume like at least one day.
Yeah.
Like I went pretty light this year, mostly because I think I was more invested in seeing what it was going to be like this year,
mm-hmm.
and I had other creative endeavors that kept me from, you know, making a lot of the big builds that I wanted to do. And then the weather is also really crappy weather. I wanted to do
one day,
Yeah, my Miss Martian. Well, I cosplayed both days. I only went 2 of the 3 days that were there because I had to work on the Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I had my Miss Martian cosplay that I wanted to pull out, but just because of the rain, mm-hmm. I didn't want to walk outside in the rain with the makeup and like in a skin tight bodysuit and everything. It was I want to be kind of comfy this year.
It's a tough time of year. I think last year HellCon was in September, but this year it was just the end of October, and in the region it can be raining sideways, hurricane season. It could be cold, it could be not cold. Like it's a complete crapshoot as to what October weather is going to be, and I can understand that that's a real problem for people that are doing cosplay. The nice thing about the new convention center, though, like if you are that dedicated and that is your thing, you can just pay for parking and never have to go outside.
It's true.
You know, like if your costume is weather sensitive, like you've made a giant cardboard transformer, well, you can actually drive into the parking garage and just take elevators up to the floors and never have to be outside, which is nice. I feel like there's opportunities, I think, in the future for stuff like that. I want to end on a positive note. I think it was a good year. I'm curious to hear more from the con runners, you know, as they move forward. I'd certainly be open to giving them some feedback, but really it's all constructive criticism. It's not really like, oh, this, you did this wrong. It's all like, well, this could be better, but you know, it just, you know,
there is an exit survey as well. Did you get the exit survey?
I don't think I did, cause I didn't go as a I didn't go to the con as a patron.
Right.
I'd have to maybe poke someone for that, or perhaps that just hasn't gone out for vendors yet. They might that could be, because the vendor team would be doing that versus the other teams that manage the different parts of the convention.
Right.
But yeah, I'm absolutely going to be reaching out and stuff like that. So to just kind of see where things are, because there was a pre-registration for next year and stuff like that. And I've already noticed some miscommunication out in the world where people are talking and I was like, no, that's not right. You didn't read, you know, like this is how it's going, not that way. And so I feel like they're going to maybe take the extra mile to kind of squish any misconceptions that are out there. But anyway, I feel like this whole episode has been about HellCon.
I know, we've kind of gone a little overboard.
Well, that's fine. Sorry. I mean, like, you know, it's fine, because I mean, it's about the geeky stuff we're into, and HellCon is one of the geeky stuff.
HellCon is one of them, and it's also Halloween, so it's appropriate to talk about costumes. So, yeah.
So what do you want to do? Do you want to wrap it up and call it a HellCon episode, or do you want to maybe dive into a little bit of what we've been watching? I don't have a lot of stuff. I haven't had a lot of time.
I mean, I'm okay with talking about it a little bit more. I'm cool with that.
Cool. So, it came out the week before HellCon. So because I was so busy getting into it, I hadn't finished it before HellCon, but I did manage to finish it over the weekend, like just kind of home watching dinner and stuff like that. So I did finish Daredevil season 3. I will not talk at length about it because I can't really talk about it without spoiling it. And it's only been out a week, so I don't really want to spoil it. I, though, unfortunately have mixed feelings about the way that they wrapped it up. I'm curious to know what the Citadel Cafe listeners think about Daredevil season 3. So if you've finished it and you have thoughts and feelings as I do, then write in. Know that I finished it. Know that you can talk about spoilers and that I will give a spoiler warning next week or the week after when I do talk about it. I really enjoyed the season overall. I was just, we'll say, surprised at how they steered the last few episodes. I absolutely still think it's 100% worth watching. Like if you've liked Daredevil at all, if you like any of the Marvel TV at all, it's probably one of, if not the best seasons they've done of anything across all of their properties on Netflix.
Oh, really?
It's good. It's really good. I'm just curious as to the ending. But again, I can't really discuss theories and possibilities without really spoiling anything. Go watch, enjoy, and then write us and let us know what you think. Mm-hmm. But that's really all the time that I've had. I've kind of half watched a couple movies. I've been watching some YouTube stuff, but it's all Minecraft related. We had a big snapshot drop for Minecraft, so I had to do a lot of prep for the podcast on Monday. So really that kind of took up all my free time watching YouTube videos about the new snapshot. So I really don't have any new, like, you know, fun, relaxing content to talk about. Have you been watching anything on Netflix?
I have, yeah. I actually just finished the new Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I too have thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, so I saw this highly recommended in the Citadel Cafe Discord.
I said I have thoughts and feelings. I don't know if I really do. I think I think my thoughts and feelings are trying to figure it if I do have thoughts and feelings. I don't hate it.
So should we warn people about spoilers?
No, not really. I won't get into too much in the story. I think I'll probably go more about like the structure of stuff. But I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I'm not even really, I kept watching it. I like every time the episode would end, I'd be like, okay, let's see what the next one's about. So I watched it to the end, and then I was like, oh, okay, we're at the end of the season now. I was a little bit surprised when it ended. So I think I liked it, but I feel like I definitely have a lot of issues with it. It's definitely going in the same direction that like Riverdale was going in. So it's like, for people who don't know, like Archie, Sabrina, they're all part of like the Archie comic properties. So Sabrina is not quite as CW-esque as Archie is. Like Riverdale is very, very like CW. Like, you know, CW has a very, very distinctive like teen style drama, like Vampire Diaries, you know, Teen Wolf, whatever. It has a very, very distinct sort of atmosphere about it. And I think that's what Riverdale did. Sabrina kind of started off that way a little bit, and then it went kind of weirdly True Blood at different points. It's weird. It's really, really bizarre. It was interesting to watch. But I felt like the wardrobe and the set design, amazing. Spectacular. Looks so good. Like, it looks really, really good. It looks really, really great. Special effects, I'm a little bit weird about. Like, they have Satan, like the devil, in there at numerous times, and I find that, like, even from like the first episode, he's in there, and he kind of looks like a really badly done animatronic puppet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there's another demon at one point that's animatronic, and it you can very obviously tell that they are puppets. Now, like, I'm glad they didn't go the CG route and did a puppet instead, because it made things a bit more tangible. I feel like it could have been bad either way. If he'd gone CG, it would have been really bad. If he'd gone an animated puppet, it was like, oh, that was an animated puppet. So I think going doing the puppet route was a little bit
better. Bad CG really takes you out of it.
It really, really does. So the fact that you could tell it wasn't CG, but some things just didn't translate super well. I'm struggling with how I feel about it. I think what gets me the most about it, and again, this is appropriate that we're talking about it on Halloween, it's very deeply, heavily rooted in quote unquote witchcraft. And I say quote unquote because in the show they depict it as very like satanic. They have like a satanic Bible. They're like, oh, for the name of Satan, whatever. Like they're really, really pinning the whole witchcraft thing in Satanism, which is not an actual thing in real life for people who practice witchcraft or who are pagan or Wiccan or whatever. The devil, hell, they're not concepts in that religion at all. And I kind of feel like it's doing a disservice to a faith that's already very poorly represented anyway, and often, you know, is made fun of as like a mockery. It's like, oh, it's all for Halloween. So I think for that, it's doing a disservice for that. I mean, the concepts are interesting. They've done some interesting research on stuff. But I feel like the research could have been done a little bit deeper. At one point, they completely misname one of their most like prominent holidays. Like today in Wiccan holidays or pagan holidays would be called Samhain, but it's spelled S-A-M-H-A-I-N, and they pronounced it Samhain on the show. And that's just a little bit of research that could have just been done. You know, if you're going to do research on it, learn how to pronounce things properly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like they obviously haven't done enough research to be like, oh, hey, witchcraft is not actually set in any sort of satanic setting whatsoever. So I don't know. That's kind of up in the air. It's fun. Like, if you want to watch it, if you like it, obviously people like it. It's a lot of people are talking about it. I think it's good.
If you go in there and kick your feet up and expecting kind of like a fun, if you are expecting like a CW witchcrafty series, similar to what's that one on CW that's been gone for like something like 11 years with the two brothers that hunt demons?
Supernatural.
Yeah, supernatural. So if you go in there kind of expecting supernatural and stuff like that, is it still fun? Like, is it, does it still
I wouldn't
have
say
that?
It's like, it's a little heavier, because I find supernatural can have some
darker.
like funsies. Like, supernatural can be kind of funny. It's a little bit like as if True Blood and Supernatural had a baby with an Archie comic.
No, that's good. That's good to know. That's good to
yeah.
know.
And, so it is a little darker.
And how does Kieran Shipka do? Because she's older now. She's like 18.
She's Sabrina. Yeah. She's not bad. I like how they actually cast a teenager as a teenager.
Yes, not a 30-year-old that looks like they're 20 that they're trying to cast as a 17-year-old. Yeah, no, I appreciate that too.
Riverdale, Archie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Trying to be 16.
Yeah, you don't have that kind of muscle maturity when you're 16.
No, God, no, you don't.
And it sets the wrong expectations and stuff too. But the reason why I ask is because she's from Mad Men. That's how I know her. She played the daughter in Mad Men, and. No, that doesn't narrow it down. She plays the main character's daughter. What's his name? That's terrible that I can't remember his name. I love Mad Men.
I don't know.
The main dude. Can't even remember the actor's name right now. That's terrible. John Hamm plays the guy. John Hamm plays the character named Don Draper. Wow, how could I not remember Don Draper? So she plays Sally Draper in Mad Men.
Okay.
But that was so long ago that she was essentially a child actor. Like, she's 8 or 9 or something. She's annoying. And it's nothing against her, because it's also, she's playing a kid in the 50s. So it's the kind of stuff that they do feels out of place anyway, because being a kid in the 50s was so different.
Yeah.
I can't say I was necessarily a fan. I never felt any chemistry between her and the mom that plays January Jones. She plays Betty Draper in Mad Men. And I never felt like there was much there.
You know what? You say no chemistry. I really felt that with this too. Like, I don't think she's a bad actor. I think that she overacted a little bit in some instances.
I feel like most kid actors do. Like, you can take a look at, again, drawing a blank. She played Hermione. What's her name?
Oh, Emma Watson.
Emma Watson. Very good actor. I've seen her in a couple of other things, and she's quite good. But in the first, even in, across the 9 Harry Potter films, or however many they made, the first two are, like, I pull my hair out when she's on screen. I find her so hard to watch. But she came into her own quite quickly. And I think that's just something that happens with, and it depends on the director too. Like, it depends on where the show's going.
It's true.
You know.
Yeah. The show is very stylized, so I feel like a lot of people overact a bunch.
Right.
But I think because she's like front and center of the whole thing, it's I think you scrutinize her a little bit more. But like you were saying, like, you didn't feel any chemistry. I didn't really feel like she had a lot of chemistry with people. She stands out a little bit, and I don't know if that's just because it's Sabrina, and Sabrina is kind of a bit of an anomaly in this anyway. She's a half witch, like, she's, you know, her mom's mortal human and her dad's a warlock, so like she kind of has this little bit of otherness about her anyway, even in both sides of the coin. But like her relationship with Harvey, like, I kind of accepted the fact that they were together just because that's how the comics are, and then Harvey and Sabrina are just in a relationship. Not really because the actors had a lot of chemistry together, and both of them were good actors, but they were, I kind of just felt like they were together because the script said they had to be, because that's what the comic said that they are.
Yeah.
Not because they really had a lot of chemistry with each other. And the kid who played Harvey is a good actor. I've seen him in other things. Like, he's not bad. I wouldn't say that anyone is a really exceptional actor in this. And there are some things that are just really weird, it kind of took me back to like the old Halloween Town movies at certain points, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cheesy. And usually I'm surprised at how critical I'm being of it, honestly, because I usually am able to find something really, really, really good that I absolutely love about something, and I'm kind of just like, about it. Like, I don't hate it. I think I'll watch the next season. I don't think I'll hold my breath for the next season.
I find that Netflix is like that. Like, it's, for whatever reason, if they don't knock it out of the park and it's not like something everybody is talking about, then it tends to be divisive. Like, people either really dislike or really love it, And yeah. if they dislike it, they then can't really put their finger on it. Like, because yeah. you don't want to come down with the hammer, because it's like, no, it's got these good qualities and good merits and good effort and high production quality because it's Netflix. So like they generally put a lot of effort in the stuff that they do. But for whatever reason, things with Netflix just fall flat. And I don't know whether it's because Netflix isn't putting, like, they're putting so much stuff out there that some of it just is just thin. Like, it just doesn't necessarily have the development time that it needs to really satisfy people.
The last thing that I watched that was a Netflix exclusive that I really sunk my teeth into and that I was really, really into was Stranger Things. And that, like, as soon as the first season of Stranger Things ended, I was like, I need to know what happens next. Oh my God. Like, I was waiting for that. Like, and like, you know, I didn't like Sabrina. Like, it was good to binge watch. I binge watched the whole thing. Ever appear, like, I turned it back on, like, I stopped watching it one night and then got up the next day and was like, you know what, let's just throw this back on again. And I think I was doing it more for the research value of it than actually wanting to watch it, but I kept watching it. I finished everything. I didn't hate it, but there are a lot of things where I was like, really, what are we watching? What is this? What's going on? Like, I was more of like, I knew what was going on, like, narratively, but it was like, why is it going on?
Yeah.
Why was this a choice that was made? And, like, you know, some of the makeup and stuff was a little bit plasticky looking. Like, they have a demon that's, you know, pretty prevalent in one episode. And just the makeup for the demon was kind of, it was all right. Like, it was just normal. It looked like a prosthetic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
I feel like a lot of shows like that. That's why I tried to go back and watch Buffy and I was like, nope, I can't.
No.
It's just not my thing. Speaking of Stranger Things, season 3 isn't coming out until 2019.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But again, like, and I say that as a good thing. That probably means that
we
could try and push it and release it for Halloween 2018, but it would not be as good as we want it to be. So we're Netflix, we'll just delay it until it's ready. And I'm on board with that kind of stuff. That probably means there's more special effects. It probably means that there's more supernatural stuff happening and as the story progresses. And I think that's fine. I'm more than happy to wait for, I'm happy to wait for good shows, because if Netflix plays their cards right, they have the opportunity to be releasing good shows all the time. It's just that you're going to be waiting longer periods between seasons. I feel like there was definitely more than a year between Daredevil season 2 and 3. I mean, you had the Defenders in there, but like for Daredevil itself, that third season was worth the wait. Like that was, cause even just the tax on the actors alone for the amount of just emotional turmoil that they have to portray on screen, that just has to be hard. I wouldn't want to do that all the time. in between Daredevil seasons, I'd like to go do a musical or something. Like, I feel like as an actor, I'd need a breath of fresh air from the shadows, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, on one hand, there are some actors who, like, you know, TV shows are great for that because they can continuously, like, you know, delve into a character and really get into their psyche and everything.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah,
like, for me, like, that's what really interests me as an actor. Like, I like to really figure out what is going on in the brain of a character. I find that really interesting, which is why I didn't like all the theater classes that I took so much, because they felt very shallow. It's like, how to be a table. And it's like, well, no, I want to learn how to delve into the psychology of what this person is thinking and feeling. That's more interesting to me and more real to me than being a table. Thank you.
When are you ever going to be a table? You're never going to be hired to be a table.
Right?
I had that issue with some stuff in art school as well. Like, I learned way more. I shouldn't say I learned way more. I found my my secondary skills college training had a lot more practical application than the, we'll say, ethereal stuff that I was supposed to be applying in fine art school. I mean, as a commercial artist in fine art school, I mean, some of it was just kind of like, why are we talking about this? Like the feeling of blah, or the, you know, like, I don't have a social commentary. I want to make money. Like, you know, like, I wasn't painting to change the world. I was trying to draw cartoons, you know, like, not that cartoons can't, you know, be used in that way, but like my interests were so far from the very traditional fine art training that I had, that I found it at, you know, 18, 19, 20, I found it kind of hard to swallow. I would probably appreciate it more now, but it's one of those things where, you know, when you want to do a thing and there's those interests of delving into a character's psyche and go through the same motions that acting schools have been going through for years, yeah, just because that's quote unquote how it's done.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff about that sort of thing that I think needs to change.
And I think it's also, you know, instructors that have been there for a long period of time and
yes,
things like that.
Yeah. But that is all the time we have for this week. If you've enjoyed the show, then why not head over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe and join the growing number of people that are helping make the show possible. Right now, there are 14 patrons as of October 31st. That is the same number of patrons as there were in September. So there is just a few hours to help us get one more patron for the month of October before we roll into November. And I like setting that goal of having one more patron the month after than we did the month before. It's a fun little goal to have. If you decide to support the show, then you get invited into the patron-only Discord chat, which is where we talk about things like The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, like Daredevil Season 3. There's a spoiler section, so people can talk about stuff freely without having to worry about it kind of scrolling by in the main chat. There's also a bunch of other stuff shows that I don't watch that I've seen been scrolling by. So you can get some recommendations in there as well. It's just a fun, nerdy place to hang out. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, there are going to be some changes on Patreon. If you are a patron currently, you can see some different roles and some different rewards coming your way. There is not so many patrons that I can't manually assign those roles and stuff in Discord later. So don't worry about it if you don't see it happen automatically. I can go through on the admin side and just assign that stuff later. If, however, you are coming in new, then now would be an excellent time to support the Citadel Cafe on Patreon. As I mentioned, we're coming up on renewing domain names and hosting stuff. There's 300 episodes that have to be housed online somewhere, and your patronage helps an awful lot. And that's patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, and I thank you in advance. You can find show notes for all the different things that Megan and I talked about today at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email me at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com and let me know what you thought of Daredevil Season 3. You can find the show on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, which is a big one. A lot of people ask for that. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online, including my illustration and design portfolio at joelduggan.com. If you would like to hire me, just drop me an email through the site. I am currently wide open for commissions, and I tend to fill up quick coming into Christmas. So November would be a good time to get one in if you're thinking about getting some artwork for a loved one for the holidays. Don't forget to tune into my other podcasts, Comics Coast to Coast and The Spawn Chunks. And that one is about Minecraft. Twitter, Instagram, everything else is just my name, Joel Duggan. Megan, where can people find you online?
People can find me online on Twitter and Instagram at @OMeganTownsend and on YouTube at just Megan Townsend.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.